How can religion actually be a deeply personal experience that is indicative of our making meaning journey? How can religion also separate us from people when it should be a place of connection? And how does our spirituality impact our relationship with family, friends, and grief? Hey y'all, I'm Reese, and welcome to Making Meaning. Making Meaning is a podcast by the Cohere Collective, here to help guide you along your path to make meaning in a way that makes sense for you. This week, I am joined by Coach Caitlin Andre. Caitlin is one of those people who automatically makes you feel seen and loved when you are in her presence, even virtually. I remember the first time meeting Caitlin and immediately being drawn to her energy and understanding why she was called to this work, because she truly has a deep understanding of vulnerability and allows herself to show up in that way, and therefore allows others to show up in that way. Quick content warning, in this episode, Caitlin and I do discuss grief, specifically with her mother, and a traumatic car accident. If either of those topics are going to be specifically upsetting to you, please listen with care. That is all I have for the intro, so let's take a deep breath. And get started. Caitlin, thank you so much for being here and taking the time and energy to sit down and have a conversation with me. I am so excited to be chatting with you.
I am so excited, Reese, and just like really honored and thrilled to be here, and a little nervous too, but excited. I'm excited and nervous.
I love it. I appreciate your vulnerability and honesty and calling it out. But I think also, I was actually talking to someone about this morning. I hope I'm not wrong in saying this. I believe it's an Alan Watts quote, but it goes, "Where your fear is, there your lesson is." And that has just been a recurring theme for me recently, especially where it's like, okay, this thing scares me. We got to do it.
I love that. I love that. That reminds me, have you been watching or any of Melinda French Gates' interviews on YouTube?
No, but I love Melinda Gates, and her book, okay. The Moment of Lift, is like one of my favorite books. Adding that to my list.
Add it to your list. All of the episodes are great, but I recently watched the one with Oprah and Gail, and Oprah talks about, you know, listening for the whispers. And sometimes your like nerves, I think, are sometimes little whispers of things to pay attention to. And her advice was to listen to those whispers before they become, you know, shouts or things that are more like aggressively looking and getting at your attention. I loved that of like that whole concept and idea of like just really paying attention and what your emotions and like what you're noticing and what's coming up for you is telling you something.
Yeah.
And to listen to it.
Absolutely. Well, and I think also this, like, and listen to the whisper before it becomes a shout. But also I think sometimes when we're really in tune with certain things, it can be easier to hear it. But if we're first starting to practice intuition and other things, it's like, it does feel like a whisper sometimes, and it's harder to hear it over the noise. So I do really love that. Well, first question, just to hopefully set a nice tone for our session today, is what is one thing you're grateful for?
Oh, I love this question. And I know it was coming. And to be, you know, again, vulnerable and completely real, like what I'm grateful for is, you know, I'm turning 40 this fall, and my own version of my midlife unraveling, as it's led me to new connections, but also reconnections, you know, reconnecting to myself, my strengths, reconnecting with friends, and kind of connecting to, like, listening to those whispers and also noticing little glimmers of joy in my everyday life.
I really love that. So, I mean, this will lead us beautifully into the next question, but first I want to pause on this word choice, unraveling. Yeah. Talk to me about that word choice, because of course we've all heard midlife crisis.
Yes.
And it sounds like maybe you don't identify with that. So talk to me about that.
I don't. I think the word crisis implies that there's something wrong. And I think every new experience that you have is teaching you something. And I think that's, you know, I have very high positivity. And so I tend to look at that, but I can't really take credit for the unraveling versus crisis. It's actually a Brené Brown quote, if you're familiar with her work, yes. And the gifts of imperfection. But, you know, I think somewhat a direct quote, but, you know, people may call what happens at midlife a crisis, but it's not. It's an unraveling, a time when you feel a desperate pull to live the life you want to live, not the one that you're supposed to live. Right? Can we take a deep breath for
yeah,
that?
Yeah, right.
And, you know, for me, growing up, I always was kind of ingrained in me and kind of like this striving and climbing and this specific definition of success. And I think as I get older, I realize that I kind of want to unsubscribe to that original, yeah. you know, kind of idea and thought, and that there's just so much more and kind of like peeling back the layers of like who I am, you know, you talk about inner child work, but like really just like rediscovering what brings me joy and rediscovering what success means to me. And historically and early in my career, that always felt like the next promotion. That always felt like the, you know, that traditional kind of climbing of like, you know, whatever. And I've just like slowly started to unravel that. And really redefine what success looks like for me. And it's been a challenging and emotional, but ultimately like really rewarding series of probably a couple years of like things happening in my life that have kind of taught me more and more in sort of what I want, how I want to live and what's the life that I want to live.
Right. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. No, I really actually relate to that a lot. And I think there is something to a quarter life unraveling as well, perhaps.
There is. Yes.
Yes. I'm like 25th birthday is coming up in like a week or so. And I'm like, yeah, that seems about on track.
So you could relate. We're kind of like these different little milestones, and like it is very much like a time of kind of like sitting back. And
yes. Allowing. Mm-hmm. You touched on several of these things, but I do want to dive deeper into what is your story, which is the second question I always like to ask. But even in hearing you talk about this kind of inner child work and healing and moving all the way now into the stage of life you're in, you mentioned a lot of unlearning of lessons. So just talk to me more about your story and how we have gotten to the place that we find you today.
Amazing. Yeah. So, so I was born and raised, you know, up until I went to college in Kansas City, Missouri. So like a great childhood. I grew up on a lake and just loved swimming and skiing and sailing, very active. Attended public schools, but like was always very high achieving in school academics and also, you know, swimming and in sports. So a really childhood defined of kind of high achieving, you know, like making good grades, being successful in sports. And then I went to college on the East Coast, and, you know, my parents both grew up in the Midwest, and their parents were kind of like, you can go to any state school in Kansas. And so they were like the world's your oyster. Where would you like to go? Dream big and explore. And so I landed at Boston College and loved my time there. But it was, you know, understandably a culture shock coming from a relatively, you know, like, I don't know, Midwestern background and a, you know, public universities to a private university and taking a lot of courses in like philosophy and theology and things that I hadn't really like learned about. But really kind of found my footing and made some incredible friends and also loved my time there because I expanded my worldview and, you know, spent a semester abroad in Hong Kong and spent a summer in Shanghai teaching English. Actually, after my freshman year, my parents were like, oh my gosh, we thought you at least would come home your first summer. And right. I'm like, well, but, you know, so I like found a program. I went with a friend, like the organization paid for our flights and our lodging. And so we stayed in a primarily like Chinese community. And so it was this really formative experience in my life of developing empathy for folks that are in spaces that like you're not the majority. And that was the first time that that had really happened for me, you know, feeling othered. And so that was really formative. And then after I graduated, I wanted to come back to the Midwest. And so the past 17 years, I've actually lived in Minneapolis, Minnesota, which is where I am now, and really moved here for a job. So I spent the first 13 years of my career at Target Corporation, primarily merchandising roles. So again, like continuing my high achieving, like climbing, you know, everything, hardworking, hustling. And then most recently have been at Ovative Group in digital marketing the past couple of years. And what I loved about my professional career is like I've spent over a decade really like leading teams and I'm really passionate about empowering women and underrepresented folks to like develop their leadership style, develop their voice and confidence. And the last 2 years, I got a little bit more serious, you know, listening to the whispers about formally investing in this. So my passion for coaching, which I feel like is kind of like something that I like love to do. And I've gotten a lot of really positive feedback. So just wanted to dive deeper in and got certified in Clifton Strengths by Gallup, if you're familiar. Mm-hmm. And after kind of taking the assessment with my good friend, Jen, and really unlocking, wow, like the power of positive psychology and focusing in on what comes naturally to you and how do you focus in on that? And if you invest in those things, you become excellent versus kind of focusing all the things that like, maybe you're not, don't come as naturally. You can do them, you know, your traditional weaknesses, but if you're investing all of your time there, the only thing that you're really doing is mitigating failure versus kind of focusing on kind of becoming excellent. And everybody has these like a unique DNA in terms of like a makeup of like your like strengths, which really unlocked, you know, for me, it made a lot of sense for all the feedback that I'd heard and like felt bad about myself. And I'm like, oh, well, this is just kind of an underdeveloped strength that I right. have. And kind of understanding that was really a pivotal moment for me of kind of one, recognizing that everybody is unique, which I knew before, but like this tool kind of helps kind of put some language behind it, which was great. And then this last summer, which is where we met, was in training to become more formally ICF accredited. So kind of learning the foundations of coaching and getting trained up on that. So, and then like from a personal side, so like I've been married for about 10 years. We just celebrated our 10-year wedding anniversary in June.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's a big accomplishment.
It is. It is.
Super big accomplishment. And we have two young kiddos, so Jackson and Etta, who are starting kindergarten and first grade next week, which like I can't even think about because I will start crying. And I already mentioned, you know, this December, I'm going to be, you know, looking forward to celebrating my 40th birthday. And in the past have, you know, had really negative views about aging, but am like really embracing it and excited about it and like leaning into it. And this year it's more meaningful for me because it will be just 2 days after the 1 year of my mom's sudden passing in a tragic car accident. And so that is definitely has been part of, and apologies if I get a little emotional.
No apologies.
As a part of kind of this unraveling is, you know, and it was like a very tragic car accident. So like, you know, I had no idea it was coming. But, you know, going through my grief has been this painful but beautiful journey of rediscovering my inner strength. And like at first when it happened, I was so scared and like, I can't do this without her because she was such a source of emotional and spiritual support and guidance for me and like my whole family. But as I have navigated it, I've found my inner strength and like my almost 39 years of learning from her. And like, she's still with me and like, she's kind of guiding me and encouraging me now. And so like, it's, you know, there's kind of this term of like post-traumatic growth. And I'm in a period of that, you know? And I think it was more emotional because, you know, 2 years prior to that, I was in a car accident myself and almost died. And so I've had like a series of really, really challenging events that have, you know, in some respects been like so, so hard, but I've found the beauty. And I was thinking of this song the other day as I was thinking about this conversation, and there's this song called Let Go by Fraufau or whatever. And I think it was like the Garden State movie, but there's this line that there's beauty in the breakdown. And I think like that is some of what of like I've been experiencing and like looking for the beauty in that unraveling and in these like really tough moments that everybody goes through. You know, my experience is not unique, but it's been this really interesting few years of really challenging things that have unraveled me, but I'm excited about what that unraveling is becoming.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you so much for sharing all of that.
I was kind of vulnerable. Sorry if I went too deep.
Oh my goodness. One, I always want to go super deep.
Yeah. I'm okay, like, good.
That's my favorite place to go. But two, no apologies at all ever for showing up authentically as you. That is the purpose of this space. And I think also one of the key motivating factors behind wanting to have a podcast where we do go there is to allow listeners to go there too, right? To say, whatever unraveling anyone is going through is okay. And we all are experiencing different unravelings or have before. And I think being able to have open conversations about that is maybe the only way that we can not deal with it, because it's not something that you want to like, okay, solve and then put it in a box and put it away, but hold it.
Yes.
Right? Because I do believe we need to do that together. One thing that I do really want to talk about is, I suppose, the role of mother. You as a mom, and having this experience with your mom recently and losing her in that role, this kind of matrilineage that has been passed down, and you mentioned that your mom was very much a source of strength, both spiritually and emotionally. And I would love to just hear more about what that role of mother means to you during this time as a mother yourself, but also as someone who has this really close relationship with her mom and is dealing with this grief all at the same time.
Yeah, I know. It's I didn't understand the joy, the pain, the immense emotions of, being a mother until I became one myself. And once I had my children, that's when my mom and I really got close because and we were close previously, but our relationship deepened because I finally felt and understood all of the emotions and the sheer responsibility and privilege and joy that it is to be a mother. And, somebody described becoming a parent as, essentially a child is like a piece of your heart that is walking around in the world, seemingly unprotected. And it's this, when you start out, it's really about like you are directing and you are like a support and you are helping to shape. And then eventually that role evolves to being more of like a coach and like a support, and that grows. So what it's been, yeah, and losing my mom really kind of like made me think about it more and more. And what an immense responsibility it is to show up. And for me, as a mother of, a young white man and a daughter, I have a very big sense of responsibility along with my husband, Rob, to raise them, and instilling, like showing, and by not only telling and teaching, but showing. How you treat others and how you talk to yourself. And I think it's a very intimidating role to be in. And I think it can be super overwhelming, but I think connecting with other like parents and moms specifically has been one of the best things that I've ever done and continue to do because you can't be a mother alone. I think back to, like culturally, we're very individualistic in the United States, right? Where it's like you have your nuclear family, you are like that's the household. But there's a reason why there are so many cultures that have intergenerational kind of like living situations and close-knit communities. And so we've lost a lot of that, where to the extent of like when you become a mother, I feel like the air we breathe is like, wow, you can't do it all. You should do it all. And the reality is like, as a working mother, there are times when I feel like I'm not successful at my job. And there are times when I'm not successful as being a mother. And that space has been very difficult to navigate. And especially as someone who, like a recovering, high achieving type A person striving for the next. And like that's a hard space to be in. And then the last thing I'll mention is, being a mother, like one, I would recommend everybody to be in therapy, but especially before you become a parent, it is so important because like the amount of emotional regulation that you have to have on the daily of like, okay, like how I'm showing up is like it matters, because like and because the way that you act, like that doesn't matter what you say, but if you react in a way, like they're gonna see that as like, something. So it's been really humbling to also in with my partner Rob to apologize to our kids too, like when we do something that like, we're like not proud of. And so it's definitely humbling, and a great honor to be a mother.
Thank you for sharing that. As someone who was not a mother, I also agree that I think everyone should be in therapy. That has been one of the most instrumental things that I've ever done in my life. And I am scared to think of the person that I would be had I not been in therapy.
Exactly.
And I would have to imagine also that not only are you having to emotionally regulate yourself so much, because it's like, I can't imagine just the things a child says flippantly that are going to hit you in ways you don't even anticipate, but you are also having to emotionally regulate those other human beings that have their emotions too, because they haven't developed those skills to do it for themselves yet. So you are running these programs like all at the same time. And having to do that without the skill set is like trying to speak a like just being dropped into another country and not knowing the language at all, right? So I so appreciate that. And since you brought up Brené earlier, one thing that when you're talking about this striving, it makes me think of the Brené quote, recovering perfectionist, aspiring good enoughist, which has just been such a theme of my life ever since I discovered her work and really started identifying with the term perfectionist. And I think you raised such a good point about the expectations that are placed on women, but particularly mothers as well, to do it all, right? And not just do it all, but do it all well and gracefully and beautifully, while looking pretty, while enjoying looking at it.
And while smiling.
Yeah.
Don't forget that one.
Actually, this is a total tangent, but I did have
the
experience the other day of the, you used to smile so much. I just wish you would smile more. And I'm like, it's because I'm finally living for myself and not for other people, actually. I think that's what it is because the smile used to not be real. And now my smile is, which means it doesn't happen as often.
Yes.
But I think when it does, it's so much brighter and means so much more, right? So it's definitely a learning moment for me there. But all of that is really tied up in success too. And you mentioned that at the start of our conversation and how this midlife unraveling is really tied to redefining what success means, what it looks like, what it feels like. And so, of course, I've kind of mentioned all of these different moving parts, but I would have to imagine they kind of all have a voice in this for you. So just talk to me a little bit about your new definition of success, your evolving definition of success, and anything else that comes up around these topics.
Yeah. I to answer that question, I'm going to tell a quick story and I'm going to keep this quick. So I mentioned that I was in a car accident and, and thankfully, nobody was seriously injured or killed in that, but it was a pretty major car accident that resulted in me having a concussion and among other kind of, I would say, like emotional, like scars. And when that happened, you know, it's a funny thing. I went to the ER and the doctor was like, well, can you take off a day or two off work? And I'm like, yes. But then I thought like, okay, well then that means I should be back to work. This happened on a Wednesday night. I took Thursday, Friday off. And then I went back, reported back to work on Monday. And I felt like, wow, I can't, like, they can't do it without me. I got to report back to duty. And like, I guess I should be back to normal. And if you can imagine, like, my job is all the things that you should not be doing if you're trying to recover from a concussion. It is looking at a screen all day long, thinking, you know, a lot of executive functioning, no breaks, running from meeting to meeting. And then my second shift of being a mother, you know, at the end of the day. So like I went back to work for a week and then realized, oh my goodness, like this is like, I had a panic attack. And then I finally was like, okay. And, a person on my team, just lovingly said at the end of the week, is, Caitlin, we've got this, like, take the time that you need to recover and heal. And I needed to hear that. And that kind of released me. And then, so I ended up taking up to a month off and, through short-term disability, which was a great benefit. And that was really hard because, like, I've been, like, very wrapped up in, you know, I feel like my identity in what I did for work. And then all of a sudden I'm seeing I'm in a position where, like, I can no longer work. I can no longer watch TV. It's hard for me to even, like, listen to music and do anything else. Like, I can't multitask. So it was this big wake up call for me, of kind of stripping away all these things that I felt like were this big part of my identity that all of a sudden I was really scared and, like, not knowing, like, okay, like, who am I? And, like, I know that I'm much more than my job, but I think up to that point, I had just placed too much of my time, energy, and transparently, like, self-worth in the success of, you know, my career and not as much weight and, transparently, like, time and energy in the other things that are, like, rich and beautiful about one's life. And so through that month off, it was the unraveling of, like, it's stripped away of this thing that I have done. And I felt like, you know, like, raised to believe being told, like, you're doing a great job. And, like, it's that positive reinforcement that you just kind of get used to. And there was a day that, you know, every day I would go on walks cause I couldn't really do much. So I spent a lot of time in my garden, which had become, like, overgrown and, just, like, full of weeds, parched, you know. I had, like, planted some flowers and they were not growing. And before the accident, I just looked out there and I was like, oh my gosh, I just got, like, dud seeds. Like, what the fuck? Like, where are my flowers, you know? And then as I'm sitting there and weeding and realized, wow, like, this really is kind of a metaphor for my well-being, that I'm expecting this garden, vibrant flowers. But when was the last time I watered it? When was the last time that I weeded, you know? And then when was the last time that I really took care of myself? You know, and do I have, like, the right routines in place? And so it was this big, like, aha moment for me, and, like, sitting in my garden of just, like, wow, like, this lands, like, this hits. And then I just had the time and space, cause my kids were in daycare and I wasn't working. So I would spend, you know, 2 hours every day going on walks, not listening to anything because I couldn't. And so I started to notice the everyday beauty that was around me all along. And there was this one day, and I will never forget this feeling, where I was walking and I was just a block from my house. I'd gone on this walk all the time, you know, but I was truly present and I had the most intense feeling of joy. Like, I'm getting emotional thinking about it, but the most intense feeling of joy. And it was because I was fully present. It's because I was unencumbered by thinking about what I had to do next and infused. And I have, you know, I mentioned, like, my mom, like, very spiritual. And so, like, I think, like, this was kind of a real awakening and rediscovery of, like, wow, I've never had this feeling after nailing a presentation at work. And I'm not going to have this feeling in the future only by kind of like this. Like, this is so much bigger. And it was just this, like, kind of beautiful moment that then started this curiosity of, why haven't I felt that level of joy? What can I do to protect that and build a life that is centered around finding the joy in my everyday? And up to that point, I hustled, you know, I hustled and I was just like, and I hustled because I wanted to go on these like big fancy vacations. And that was like, I worked and worked my ass off to then like book that big trip. And then like, that's my big reward. And then I just was just like, you know, but what I'm missing is in the everyday. And so that redefining from what I felt like I had been conditioned and told and maybe just absorbed of like what success is right. climbing the corporate ladder, the status that you have, how much money you have, to what's the status of my relationships and the depth of my community and the connection to myself and the connection to nature and the connection that I have with my kids and how I'm raising them and working towards what I feel like my God-given talents are and sharing those. And so it's been really hard, but like that was kind of the big impetus. And now I've just been slowly trying to like break a lot of those old tapes and stories in my head. And it is so hard and it is a daily struggle, you know, like I make it sound like, yep. And then I got it. No, it is hard.
Right.
It is hard to like actively, you know, like not get so worked up over things that like, you know, in 5 hours, will it matter? In 5 days, will it matter? In five years, will it matter? And if the answer is no, then again, let it go.
Right. Absolutely. I thank you for sharing and this beautiful moment of pure, clear presence, I think is always available to us, right? Mm-hmm. It is always there. And the, I'll use your language, tapes, stories, messages, narratives that are running on a loop in the background prevent us from tuning in to that pure presence. And almost when you weren't able to do anything but be there is when we can kind of awaken to that. And I think it does take that for a lot of us, even those that are extremely in tune or aware to snap out of it, right? But the stories we tell ourselves are so powerful. And so many of the stories we tell ourselves are the stories that other people have told us that we've memorized. We have got them down, even if we don't think we're telling them to ourselves. They are still running on repeat in the background. And I just think a lot of people can relate to exactly what you're saying in wanting to break out of that cycle and choose something different. While of course you did not have any agency in this accident happening to you, and while we can find silver linings and blessings, I don't think that you would have wished for this accident or wished that upon anybody, right?
No.
But what ways after having this experience have you actively chased this feeling of present awareness, joy? Again, and you said you kind of were inspecting your routines and watering this garden, right? What are the ways that you have started to try and water this garden to continue building a life that feels joyful?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a great question. And I think I'm trying things all the time, but the major thing that I did after, it was probably within 6 months after my accident, that I actually kind of did it, but I moved from full-time 5 days to 4 days. Thankfully it was an option available at my current employer. And so I was able to kind of scale back, what my roles were. And every Friday I now have off. And this is it's my recharge day. And, my kids are still in daycare and or school. And it is a day that, like, I don't sometimes even do the errands that I need to do. It is just about refilling my cup because, and creating the space every week where I choose how I want to invest that day. And some weeks that looks like a massage and binge watching a show. Some weeks that looks like scheduling lunch with a friend or happy hour. And some weeks that looks like going to the gym and, you know, sitting in the hot tub for like 2 hours straight and then coming home. Some weeks that looks like going to a movie solo. And it really has been something so rewarding for me, to one, say, no, and here's the thing, like, I actually got very nervous when I said I was working 4 days and then people assume that I was spending that fifth day with my kids. And I wasn't. And I felt actually a lot of shame in, like, then kind of saying, oh, actually, no, this is a day just for me. Does that tell you anything about?
I mean, I hear you. Like, it, and I think, I mean, to go back to like expectation of woman, expectation of mother, yes. Like, if you're yes. not doing this, you must be doing these things. Mm-hmm. And the inherent shame built into that you must be needless yes. in order to be good at these other things, which is mm-hmm. just an impossible expectation.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the major thing that I've done. And then I'm just trying little things about being more mindful and present about boundaries around, you know, work and shutting that down and like being really present with my kids and being really in tune with what my body and my intuition is telling me. And I feel like in the past, I've felt it or whispered, but I just powered on. And I muscled, white knuckled through yeah. things because like, this is a hard day, but I'm just going to like do it anyway. And so yeah. I have been actively trying to try softer, not try harder. And some days that it looks different, but it's right. really about trying to be very much in tune with, and for me, sometimes like my body will kind of like start to yell at me if there's something in my unconscious that like, maybe I haven't like thought about, but it starts yelling at me. So for me, it's kind of like the between the 2 and 4 a.m. like wake up at night. Like if that happens, you know, like then that's my signal of asking like, oh, I wonder what's going on. Like why am I, you know? So I'm not sure if I answered that question, but it's kind of like creating the schedule that and space that I need and then trying to on the everyday really listen to my body and stay in tune.
Yeah.
To trust it. And I think, and then honor and act on that and take care of myself in the same way that I take care of others.
Right. Well, and step into mother for yourself, right? Yeah. Like embracing the same care and nurture of so many qualities that we can ascribe to the archetype mm-hmm. of mother. But I do think mm-hmm. that a lot of inner child work, going back to what you mentioned mm-hmm. at the beginning, at least for me, has really felt like stepping into this mothering role mm-hmm. For myself. Not that I didn't have an amazing mother who did all of those things, right?
Right.
But embracing that inherent feminine quality that we deserve to show ourselves the same way that we have a drive to show other people. Mm-hmm. When it comes to this question of shame, it's really hard to talk about, but I think it's such an integral part of taking care of ourselves. It just is, especially for women. And I think in taking time, one thing that has kept occurring to me in my own work with self-care is if I feel shame in taking care of myself, I'm actually not getting the rest or self-care, right? Yeah. Because that shame is essentially counteracting everything else that I'm doing.
Yes.
How do you engage with that shame piece and like the honesty and bravery of, no, I'm not spending time with my kids. I am spending time with myself and I deserve that because I am a human being. Right?
Yeah.
Like that is, everyone deserves that, right?
Yeah.
Talk to me about shame.
Yeah. I mean, this could be a whole nother episode, girl.
Right.
I mean. and a whole body of work of Brené's work.
Right.
But, but for me, it like what's helpful for me is like kind of getting in tune of like when I start to feel that and that icky feeling and then like naming it, but like going back to what I know is true. And what I know is true is that I deserve to live a whole, you know, life and take care of myself. And I think what, you know, specific to the shame that I felt about, you know, not spending that day off, like with my kids was really reframing in the why that I did it. And like the why that I did it was because, you know, I think the misguided thing about, you know, self-care being selfish is like, that's not true. Because if you aren't taking care of yourself and your needs, then you are showing up in the world and in your relationships in not the best way that you can be. And so what really helped me is reframing and thinking more about, you know, maybe like to others, like spending more time with my kids makes me a quote unquote better mother. But actually what being with showing up for my kids and showing up as a better partner and mother actually looks like is for me to not feel so run down, tired, exhausted, so that I wake up on Saturday morning or I pick them up from daycare or school on Friday night and I'm excited to see them because like I've put my oxygen mask on first, you know, because I am, my cup's full. And so thus I can pour into them in a more meaningful way versus like, oh, I'm just going to spend time with you because that's what I'm supposed to do.
Right.
But I am just spending, for me, maybe not as high quality a time and I'm not really present and I'm not showing up in the way that I want to show up. And I think, kind of tying back to like your emotional regulation, like, you know, it's pretty easy for me after going through therapy and kind of like doing that work to understand those little like red flags of like, okay, like this means that I need to do something.
Right.
And kind of easily annoyed and easily kind of rattled is like a big indicator for me. But I just found like when I took that day and like took care of myself all weekend, I showed up as the partner and as the mother, as the friend, as the daughter, as the sister that I wanted to be.
Yeah.
And so again, like, do I still feel like guilt and shame? But yes, but then I quickly tell myself, but actually like, this is what I need to do to show up in the most, like the most authentic and real and whole way to the folks in my life.
Absolutely. And I do think a lot of it is, as a fellow therapy enjoyer, my kind of method that has worked really well is cognitive behavioral therapy in this.
Yeah.
Okay. When I feel that narrative coming in, it's like, okay, what is the story I'm replacing it with? Because I do not choose this story anymore. So instead of, it's like, okay, there is the shame narrative. Mm-hmm. Nope. I am choosing the story of when my cup is full, I can better pour into other people.
Yes.
When I take care of myself, I can better take care of others. And quality over quantity, right? Like all of these things that we can start to really tell ourselves to try. And I don't know if the journey is ever complete in this way, but in rewriting the narratives that we have been born into, been conditioned into, been socialized into, I do think that that is part of our duty as human beings wanting to make the world a better place, is acting in accordance with the stories that we want other people to live as well. And so I think it's very noble to be doing this self work. Like, truly, what a beautiful gift to the world around you in, I mean, giving your kids the example of, I can take a Friday off of work, and that's good. Not only is it okay, it is encouraged and a good thing to do. Like, that already is moving the needle forward in a really, really beautiful way. One thing that, of course, one thing that I do want to also talk about, if you're comfortable going here, is kind of the spirituality piece, because I think one thing that grief, of course, brings up is spirituality, inherently. So I would just love to hear, especially knowing your mom was a spiritual influence on you, a little bit about your relationship to higher power and spirit and source, and what that's looked like, and maybe how that's changed too as your relationship with self has changed.
Yeah. Great question. And, you know, for me, I was raised in the Christian faith. And so when I say spiritual, it's really grounded in kind of the Christian faith tradition. But I like to think about it kind of like more expansively too, because I think it's a little bit more applicable, but I think the fundamentals of the Christian faith is that we are one among many, and that, you know, it is not about the self. It is about others, and it is about, and so that has been really formative. And my mother was a woman of deep faith, and you know, I remember that, you know, my father-in-law like first met her, and he was like, wow, like she is like, I've never met anybody like her, like she's so amazing. Like, what, like how does she show up? And I'm like, that's her faith. And it's because she lives by not focused on being so selfish and like advancing her own means. It is about like the non-self. And I think like, if I were to kind of make that applicable, like that's how I really view the world, and how like it and having, you know, my mom had a servant's heart. And, you know, that's like, I think maybe like a very Christian term, but I think the term it is, but I see it more broadly in, it is about not what can you do for me lately, but how can I help you, and how are you helping others? And so that, and that for me has been helpful when I become so wrapped up in what's happening in my life. And like this, you know, it's like, no, there's like so much more goodness and like service for others that we should be focused on. And that's always been a really grounding place. And prayer and meditation is something that like I find a lot of comfort in knowing that there is a higher power. And for me, you know, I believe, you know, in God and Jesus. And to me, that is a very integral part of me. And when I get so focused and harried in life, this is not all, you know. And it was a big source of comfort when my mom passed. And within our belief, it's like she is in heaven, and she lived every day. She left it all out in the field, right. You know? And right. She, you know, it was incredible. Like we read all, like she kept journals, and she kind of like went like deep into like the Psalms and her interpretation of them. And it's just like, she was such a beautiful woman. And, it's really just about, it's not about the self. And, and that's what I try to ground myself in. And she was always so a strong force in that for me throughout my life that I'm hoping that I can demonstrate that for others, you know? But yeah.
No, I love that. And I do think that this idea of servant's heart, there are so many, being raised in Texas very much.
there you go.
In
you
know. The Southern Baptist community, but, mm-hmm. And it's really informed a lot of my spiritual, beliefs, because there is so many, or are so many sayings and phrases in the heart of what, in my mind, Christianity is intended mm-hmm. to be, mm-hmm. Is the heart of so many other things as well. That is this like other before self. Like we are, like you said, one of many, one of much, part of one, right? And yes. That notion is extremely comforting to me. And that when I am helping someone else, I am inherently helping myself and vice versa. And I think that goes mm-hmm. back to this belief in self-care and releasing shame from that mm-hmm. too. Mm-hmm. And having a belief in something more than self has just provided a lot of, I do think comfort is just the word I keep going back to. And I remember losing my grandma when I was younger. And while at that point in my life, I didn't really believe in a literal heaven and hell. I've taken a much more personal, metaphoric approach to my varied spirituality at this point. Yeah. Knowing that she is still here was just one of the most powerful things for me. Yes. And so I guess I would really love to know about that piece with your mom too. And in this kind of literal versus metaphoric interpretation, and in the way that specifically through the Christian lens, this is a personal relationship with our higher power, right? Mm-hmm. What does that personal look like for you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think for me, it's a question more like my personal relationship with Christianity and God, or my, like how I think about my mother.
Both, any, all, okay. None.
Okay. Sounds good. I would say for me, my personal, my faith is like, I was raised, I would say like a very like strict faith, like not a devout family. And I think there was so much like amazing things about that. And as I have gotten older, like my like spiritual path has been like always grounded in those like core fundamentals. But like what I have transparently been challenged with is, I think anything man-made is inherently somewhat flawed. And so I think about like the church in that way of being flawed, and like all man-made institutions are, but if you strip that away, the core and the heart of of like the Christian faith is so beautiful. And so like, that's what I really hold on to and have a quite, like, I would say more like liberal congregation that we attend and really welcoming to all folks. Because I think that that's like the message of like Jesus is that he is, yeah. You know, a man who talked to like prostitutes and to the poor. And so I think that I think that servant's heart gets lost in some congregations and Christian faith communities that like, really it is about, taking care of, you know, your community and creating a community and supporting one another. And that it's like, subscribe, you know, like,
yeah.
I'm in, I'm in.
Yeah.
I think what gets lost and what's challenging and like, even kind of the shame that I'm think like that's coming up for me is like saying the Christian faith is like, as we go into this election cycle, you know, saying that I'm of the Christian faith, people have their ideas on then like, yeah. what my beliefs are and my stance are, and that I'm a certain political party and have certain views. And I have a lot more of a nuanced perspective on
yeah.
that. And, you know, I am very much a feminist and as well. And so like, there's lots of like the Christian, some Christian faith family, like kind of things that I don't believe in. But I think it's hard in the current environment even to kind of be talking sure. about religion, because people always have a kind of like a certain set of assumptions of like what yeah. that means about what you believe. And then by then how you vote and then how you live your life. And I would say like, for me, it's always been a little bit more expansive and, in that.
So yeah.
I'm not sure if
that... No, that's beautiful. And yeah, no, that really touches on a lot. 'Cause I do think religion and spirituality in that they overlap are both so fascinating to me, and how mm-hmm. people are gifted answers and then how they mm-hmm. take and deconstruct and reconstruct mm-hmm. and provide new answers for themselves. And I think mm-hmm. fundamentally humans are meaning makers, right? Like we mm-hmm. take this information mm-hmm. that we're being given and we'll write a story about it. And I think that that's the thing that religion does across history, is it tells yeah. a story to try and answer these unanswerable questions. Mm. And yet we all have our own personal story about the religion too, that should yeah. be nuanced and yeah. expansive. I love that word when applied to this, because what is higher power? What is source if not expansive, if not mm-hmm. inclusive, if not mm-hmm. profoundly bigger than the human mind can comprehend? Mm-hmm. So I really appreciate you bringing up that vocabulary, but also your honesty within that. And I think in terms of like the sociopolitical and just zeitgeist that we exist mm. in this time, being able to hold nuance is getting more and more and more difficult. And the more yeah. that we can talk about that and talk about the pieces that inspire connection and curiosity and care, mm-hmm. hopefully the more we can also hold nuance and like in the face of difference, have curiosity, and in yes. the face of misunderstanding, hold care. And yeah, so I think that's just my innate curiosity is also, how do you dig into this curiosity, right? Of yeah. what are we doing here? And how does that inform these questions? And I think inherently in dealing with grief, dealing with self-care, dealing mm-hmm. with being a mom, a woman, a human being, we confront these things every day. So I so appreciate mm-hmm. your vulnerability in going there.
I know. I'm like, do I want to go here? Well, I'm going to go here. Yeah. I'm going to go here because I'm going to be vulnerable and I want to be courageous in this conversation. Yeah. And I think like I've felt a lot of shame about like saying that I'm a Christian and like, I'm like, well, why, you know?
Yeah.
And it's because I think of what other people then assume what that means about me. And I, and that inherently I don't like, you know, like we're losing the art of nuance and communication and the connection. And like, I fundamentally believe that like we all have more in common than what we have not in common. And let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Let's connect on what brings us together.
Yeah.
And what we all want and desire out of life.
Right.
And that's connection. It's making meaning. It's having a meaningful life and contributing in a meaningful way. So thank you for sharing. I didn't know we were going to go this deep here on this podcast.
No,
okay.
It's what I love, what I like talking about. Well, and as someone who raised in the Christian faith, I don't necessarily identify as a Christian anymore, but there are certainly still, like you were saying, those fundamentals that of course inform the rest of your life. And I think as I've done more research and investigated to construct my own spiritual practice that feels really aligned for me, just in what you're saying about there's fundamentally more that's in common than different, the more that I've researched different religions and different spiritualities, the more I'm like, it's all love, man.
No, it's true.
Like,
and like,
but it really,
And when I've had like deep conversations with like folks from other of the major religions, it's so incredible because there's so many things that are common, you know, but we're all just kind of focused on like the differences.
Yes. And I do think that, one thing that I also wanted to raise is, I think I actually might have mentioned this in another podcast, but it really was so profound for me, the documentary God and Country, which does a really great job of talking about this intersection between politics, nationalism, and religion in the United States. And one of the things that I think the documentarians did really geniusly is interviewing primarily Christian individuals, faith leaders, and researchers. Mm-hmm. So it is these people being critical of people that share their same belief system, but talking about it in a very informed way. And I just had such respect for that. And internally in any system, right? Whether it be religion, spirituality, or political party, or school, or, you know, whatever category a group of people lump themselves under, we must be self-critical and self-reflective because that is how we grow and get better. So throw that out there as well.
I love that. I'm going to have to write that down and check it out. God and Country?
God and Country, yes.
Okay.
It is quite – it's a hard watch, but I think worth it. It's a hard
Sometimes
watch.
Those are the best ones, though. You know, they make you, you know, think and reflect.
Yes. Well, and about kind of the heart of love as a part of a religion and how certain titles are maligned, that it's like, this, at least to me, doesn't really feel like the faith that I see so many others profess. But anyways, tangent on that front.
Oh, no, I love it. I mean, now I'm curious about your faith and spiritual journey and like how you got to where you were.
Yeah.
But I guess this is not like, I don't know. I don't want to derail.
No, not at all. to give you just like a brief overview. So raised Christian growing up, Bible Belt, whole nine. Yeah. But my parents never really seemed like they were like fully invested. And that was always something that was really intriguing for me was, okay, I'm being raised with this system, but there's something else here that I don't quite understand. And yet, from a very young age, I always felt extremely spiritually aligned. There's something bigger than myself. There's something big that I'm meant to do, that I am a part of. And the word that I was given for that was the Christian God, right? Like that was the language that I was gifted. So for a very long time, I was like, that's exactly what it is. And then as I began talking with my parents more and had some unfortunate experiences in the church and with people of Christian faith, which I think is a really unfortunate aspect of a lot of people's experience with Christianity, but a lot of different religions as well. It really motivated me to investigate and get curious. And I got really deep into Hinduism and Buddhism around middle school. And around that same time, I was kind of stepping into my own as a writer and interested in poetry and this really beautiful intersection between Eastern religious traditions and writing extremely fascinated me. And so then it just kind of broke open this exploration of, okay, well, also, how are the different Abrahamic traditions intertwined? And how does that go back to Zoroastrianism as like the first monotheistic religion? And actually, how did we get there? And the history behind it and the context behind it. And so now more than anything, I think I'm very much a believer in, I mean, even as I talk about this, you'll hear me say universe, God, source, I am, like all of these different words, because I do think there is something so unspeakable about that power that all of these words and all of these religions and faith systems point to. And one of my favorite metaphors that I can't remember where I heard it, but I feel like I heard it, but now I'm like, did I make it up? And I, and that's why I can't remember I heard it, but maybe not. But is that there's a light bulb behind a wall, and this wall is covered in holes. And each hole is a different access point to see the same light bulb, right? And I really think that I've taken a step back from the wall, and I am just so curious about how all of these different holes got here and what we all pick a hole to see through, to see this source. And I think you can get really close to it when you dive really deeply into one access point. But just that innate human curiosity is, to me, part of the beauty of spirituality and connecting to one another. And so to put a label on it, I tend to say I'm spiritual slash agnostic, not in that I don't know if there's a higher power. I definitely believe in a higher power, but it's hard for me to give a title, not to say that I may not one day, I may not discover something that feels really aligned. But it's also difficult when it's like, I believe in Jesus, big Jesus girl. But it also feels wrong to call myself a Christian when I hold these other beliefs as well. And same thing with like Buddhism. I love like Zen Buddhism, especially. There's so many beautiful practices in that that have felt so resonant to me, but also feels a little dishonest to call myself a Buddhist when I hold so many other beliefs. So I try and just be as open as possible. And I think sometimes that can, in these conversations, come across as a bit obfuscated, which is not the intention. But I do think when talking about language and nuance is very important, but especially when it comes to someone's faith system, I think respect is always something that I want to hold at the forefront of that as well, because I want my spirituality to be a source of connection and not butting heads or disconnect, which I think is unfortunately what we see happen a lot today. So that's, I said brief overview and then talk for 10 minutes.
No, I love it. I love it because I think, you know, what I love in that story is your like insatiable curiosity and how you're kind of pulling the thread to then like, kind of like, well, I wonder how we got here and like learning. And I think there's something so beautiful about that. And I think with faith and spirituality, like maybe within like the traditional faith, and maybe I'm just speaking about Christianity, I think sometimes that act of questioning like the Bible or questioning what is being said is seen in a really negative light, but I think it's a natural part of anybody's religious / spiritual experience is to ask those hard questions and learn. And like that, like some of the most formative, you know, folks in the Bible did that, you know, and it's like, you like, that is so natural and human. And I think necessary, I think to get to, you know, to like your, like to the, to your truth, or to kind of like understand like how to make meaning of these really complex things in the world. And you're hearing all these different versions of it. But I think this, like, I don't think it's a bad thing to question and be critical.
Yeah.
You know, like we should be questioning and critical of all things that I feel like are being indoctrinated or like told to you. You know, I think that's a very natural thing, and I don't think it's a bad thing. So kudos to you to kind of like embarking on that journey so young and having that sense of exploration and curiosity.
Thank you. I do think a lot of it was encouraged by having parents that were like, we wanted to give you a framework, but we're still exploring too. And so I think in some ways, having that natural curiosity nurtured really helped. But also, I think some people are just innately more curious about certain things than others. Mm-hmm. And I know like this spiritual conversation is like my favorite conversation to have. And other people I'll talk to and they're like, I'm just not that worried about it, you know? And it's like, that's a-okay too, if that's your cup of tea. But I do think the one thing that you said that is the most important to me is getting to our own definition of truth. And I think we each have our own lower T truth, but then there is a capital T truth that I don't think any of us are going to fully understand in this lifetime, but hopefully we get to eventually. I think that is hopefully the goal. To round out this beautiful conversation, or were you going to say something?
I was just going to say one more thing. Sorry. I'm just like really enjoying this conversation.
Please.
The one thing, and I'm also passionate about like well-being, and I think this area of spirituality is like not something that folks really understand, but if your listeners or if you are curious, I'm not sure if you've heard of or know of the work of Dr. Lisa Miller, of really doing a lot of research on the science of spirituality and the benefits of having a spiritual or religious practice. And it's fascinating. And she has a book called The Awakened Brain. And she literally does like brain scans and digs into this element of like, if someone has a spiritual practice or like is part of a faith tradition, what does that do to your brain and thus to your like well-being? And so I would encourage you to check that out. And the Cliff's Notes is, it doesn't matter what faith tradition or like what you believed, if you did though believe and have a spiritual calling, it has these amazing effects, positive effects to your cognitive mental like functioning. So anyway, my plug.
No.
You're giving me God and Country. Yeah. Check out Dr. Lisa Miller. Yes.
And I will link all of that down below as well. If our listeners want an easy entry access point, you can just scroll on down and check it out, because that is so fascinating. And I think the overlap between spirituality and well-being exists very heavily for a reason, right? Mm-hmm. It is, there is such my friend calls it venning, when it's like the Venn diagram there is like similar.
Oh, I love
it's like,
that. I haven't heard that. Venning.
Spirituality
okay.
and well-being definitely Venn. They definitely Venn.
Yeah.
Which I love. Yeah. Okay. Final two questions. One, in light of our conversation and everything we've talked about, is there anything we haven't covered that you're like, I need to throw this out there? Anything you want to go back to? Anything you'd like to clarify? Or anything that you would like to plug and talk about for the listeners?
Yeah. Okay. So the one thing that we haven't gotten to that I would like to plug, because it's
so interconnected to this conversation.
Yes.
Is one of my best friends and I, like Jen Tebow, have co-facilitated and co-lead a retreat. And it is like the weekend that like I want to do to like decompress and reconnect with myself and others. And it's really kind of, I think, like a sacred space of like just for women and femmes to like come disconnect for 4 days and three nights, live in a house together, have chef prepared meals, and really kind of remove a lot of the external like to-do list and tasks to create a space where you can reconnect with yourself and reconnect with others. And so it's been this like really fun adventure. Neither of us had like done retreats, but we're both kind of coaches. And she threw out this idea. I was like, we should do this. And I'm like, I'm in. And we did it last year. It was the first year. And so we're going to be diving into more of Clifton Strengths and doing one well-being kind of session. But have like a weekend of optional events, but available to you of yoga and sound baths and this workshop set in this beautiful setting in Southern California, right on a nature reserve. So I would love for you, for your listeners to kind of check it out, as it's been, a big joy for me. And I would say, I mentioned that my mom passed last December, and this first retreat that we hosted was 6 weeks later. And, you know, I had created this, this weekend with my friend Jen, thinking like, oh, I'm going to give this experience to others and I can't wait. And I was the one who needed to be held and supported. And it was just an incredible weekend. And for me, it's like, it's kind of life, right? You think that you're like, oh, I'm doing this for others, but then I'm creating this weekend when I needed it the most. And I'll share this, and I was going to share too, but like at that first weekend, you know, my mom was the first person to sign up. She was supposed to be there. And, you know, obviously she wasn't there physically. But she also was. And that was beautiful because we did one session of some like transcendental like breath work. And one of the other participants, and I never met her, but she came up to me afterwards and she's like, I'm debating if I should tell you this or not, but during my experience, I felt and saw your mom in this room. And I had, and she comes from a kind of a Latin background, so this like deep respect for your ancestors. And she said, I felt this overwhelming sense of calm and peace, and I just knew that it was your mom. And I was like, I just lost it, because that's what she meant to me. That's what she made people feel. And so like, she had no idea about that. I hadn't shared that. I mean, I'd shared that my mom was supposed to, you know, be there and that I had lost her. But, so it's this, like, it was this beautiful moment. And for me, it was so beautiful to have her share that story. And she was like, I was nervous. I don't know if I should have told you or not. And I'm like, no, please, because that's how she made others feel. And you know, some may see that as be like, that's wacky, but like, to me, it was so meaningful. And I do believe that she was there. So
absolutely. Anyone that is listening is ready to embark on this beautiful experience. All of the information will be in the description down below. Absolutely. And I think that story just speaks to, I mean, the safe, sacred space that is created women gather with the intention of self-care and connection. It truly is such a sacred space. I think that speaks to you and your friend as well, and the intention behind creating this. So I highly encourage everyone to check it out wherever you are accessing the podcast. You'll be able to do so down below. And final question to wrap out this conversation is just, what is one word that describes how you are feeling right now?
Just grateful. I'm very grateful for this conversation and for the space that you've created here. And I'm just grateful to like connect with you and on this deep of level. I'm just grateful.
Me too. I think that is the perfect place.
How are you
place.
Feeling? What is your one word?
There's so every now and then someone will flip it back, and it's always so funny because I'm like, oh, I've always caught off guard and I shouldn't be. I think, you know, grateful is always kind of on the tip of my tongue to reach for, but I think also connected. It's such an honor to do this podcast, even very similar to your story of the retreats, where it's something that truly is intended to be an offering, but I receive tenfold from it. And it really feeds my soul to be able to connect really deeply, and it gives me an excuse to ask the inappropriate questions that you shouldn't ask at dinner parties, but I can say, tell me what you think about God, and it's great.
I love it.
Yeah. But it really does help me feel connected, not only, of course, to you and to a broader community, but also to myself and to my purpose, which is just, I can't ask for anything more. So thank you so much for being a part of that and for sharing so vulnerably and openly and sharing your time and energy here today. I truly cannot thank you enough.
Yeah, thank you. You are a gift, and I was so nervous coming into this conversation, but you are such a gracious and beautiful host, and what you're creating here is so needed. So thank you for your gift and your servant's heart to creating space for meaningful conversations. So your gift.
Thank you. Thank you all so very much for being here today. And a huge thank you to Caitlin for her time, energy, and vulnerability in this episode. I love when I hit that stride with a guest where you can tell that it has turned from an interview into a conversation, and we're just going. And I truly had such a joy just flowing with Caitlin in this moment. Caitlin also offers retreats for women wanting to deepen their self-improvement and spirituality, and she has one coming up very soon. Information for that will be in the description down below wherever you are listening to the podcast, so you can absolutely check out tickets and everything that that entails. I can promise you it will be worth your while. You will also be able to find all of Caitlin's information to follow her work down in the description below. You can follow me on Instagram at Lillian Reese Brown. And if you're interested in the Cohere Collective and all that we have to offer, head on over to www.thecoherecollective.com and follow us on social media at The Cohere Collective, wherever you have social media. We are all over the place and would love to connect with you wherever you are open to connection. If you have enjoyed this episode, please give the podcast a like, a comment, a review, a rating, a subscribe, a follow, whatever the terminology is, wherever you are listening, any and all of it is the best way to support the Cohere Collective, the Making Meaning podcast, and the work that we're trying to do. A big thank you to Nicole Ostreicher for Making Meaning's art and podcast cover. You can find her on Instagram at Nicole O Creates and Nicole O Design. A big thank you to Tristan Morgan for Making Meaning's theme music, and you can find him on Instagram at Tristan Morgan. Right now, I am feeling charged. That's an interesting one, but that is what's coming up. I think I feel very excited in a lot of ways for the journey that I'm on right now. If this is your first episode of Making Meaning, I have just recently moved to Florence, Italy, and it has certainly been one of the most powerful experiences, specifically in chasing my coherence, that I have had. And it's both charged and charging in the deep excitement that it creates, but also sensitivity that I have around these new experiences. Everything that I am going through feels new again. It almost feels like the experience of being a teenager where everything is your whole world in that moment, and everything really does feel that important right now. And I think it's just because everything is so new. But it is really showing me, through the challenges that I'm facing in this experience, why I wanted to do this, why I am following this path and this call to move to a new place. It's because clearly there are lessons to learn through this. So even on the hard days, that's always a nice reminder. And I hope if you're going through something right now that is exciting but also scary, that you are able to find the beauty in that balance. I believe that is all I have. But thank you so very much for being here. And I hope you feel like you are living more coherently. Until next time, love.